Naomi Kinder, and I am a member and worship associate for the First Unitarian, First Unitarian Universalist in Albany. I welcome you into this community of hope and transcendence. Here we seek wisdom beyond our own experience. Here we open our loving minds to the mystery of wonder and imagination. Here we transcend the day-to-day of our lives to seek for truths both meaningful and sustaining. Here we seek to offer a loving message that provides wholeness in a broken world. We are Unitarian Universalists. I offer my welcome to you, and in particular, to those who are first-time visitors. We invite you to fill out one of the visitor cards found in the back of the gray hymnal and place it in the offering plate or give it to an usher. We'll send you our church newsletter for the next 3 months to let you know about the programs and activities going on here at the church. We are glad you are here and hope to see you again on future Sundays. We do have a nursery for infants and young children under the age of 4 years old through these doors to the left, the first door past the foyer. Our religious education program begins this fall on September 25th. Until then, the children will remain for the whole service. At the front, we have a spirit chair, which includes activities for all ages. You okay? Okay. You are invited to go to the spirit chair at any time during the service to take an activity back to your seat. Our interim minister, Reverend Fortune, serves our congregation half-time and the congregation of Emerson UU Chapel in Ellisville, Missouri, half-time as well. They are with us roughly every other week for this church year and will lead worship once or twice each month. If you'd like to make an appointment to meet with Reverend Don, their contact information is printed in your order of service. In our pulpit today is Dee Evans, a member of our church. We welcome everyone into this home of comfort, spirit, justice, and hope. We do have quite a few announcements today. The first is from Paul Herbert. Paul?
Yeah.
Okay, hi. September's Romeo Luncheon was postponed from last week. Will be held this Thursday at the Best Buffet in Wood River. The next one is from Robin Crane, who I did not see today, so. Okay, she. Several are interested in the distribution of personal care items to people who are either homeless or poor, have developed a list of products that we need for our recipients. It's in chart form in a folder on the desk in the worker room. Please feel free to take one and bring your products to church well before the fourth Sunday distribution so we can assemble packages ahead of time. So they're going to do care packages this time, so before fourth Saturday. There is an upcoming documentary, Defying the Nazis, The Sharps War, on Channel 9. This is the heroic and almost unbelievable story of the UU minister, Reverend Whitwell Sharp, and his wife, Martha, who undertook to bring to safety people threatened by the Nazis. It's produced by Kevin Byrne and the Sharp's grandson and features Tom Hanks as the voice of Wait Still Sharp. This is certainly can't miss TV. Showtime locally on Channel 9 is September 20th at 8 p.m. and Thursday the 22nd at 2 a.m. September 18th is the Alton Ingathering. Bring desserts, cheese plates, and fruit plates to share. October 2nd, we are having a joint service and meeting with Emerson Chapel on October 2nd, beginning at 10:30. It will be held at Dr. Edmund A. Babler Memorial State Park. You have been given maps of the park this morning. It must be in your order of service, okay? Emerson will provide the hot dogs. If you wish to grill, there are grills, so bring food and charcoal. Please bring a side dish to share, since there is no electricity, no crock pot dishes. There will be a beer tasting, so if you have a beer you'd like to enter into the tasting, Please bring along a couple of bottles. Carpooling and designated drivers are highly suggested. We will host a similar event in April in this area and invite Emerson. And lastly, information about the conference by the UU Mid-America Region, Beyond Borders, Controversies, Frontiers, and Growth in Unitarian Universalism is on the desk in the worker room. If you are interested, please make a copy and return the original to the desk. Oh, and one more, sorry. This is from Jennifer Lewis, over here. We are looking for volunteers in the RE classroom. Nothing is required but your time. If you are interested, please see Jennifer at the service or email her. Yes? It is the 2nd of October, and it starts at 10:30. We begin our service with a prelude. As Debbie Lavelle brings up the flame to light our chalice, I invite you to join in our unison words for lighting the chalice, printed in your order service and projected on the wall. We light this chalice, symbol of Unitarian Universalism. May it remind us of the divine spark in all of creation, the power of love to heal what is broken, and to be grateful for life's blessings each day. Thank you, Debbie.
Let us gather ourselves as one and breathe together. Breathe in and breathe out. And again, breathe in and breathe out. With our breaths synchronized, we bring into this sanctuary the holiness of our hearts, the power of our intentions, the strength of our reason, and our humility of being right-sized in the world, we gather freely, joined not by creed, but by principles and dedication. We gather for fellowship, community, spiritual challenge, and to share in the service of something larger than ourselves. Blessed in our imperfection, it is our commitment to spiritual growth that brings us here each week. Come, let us worship together. That's by Dawn Fortune. I invite you now to rise in body or spirit and to join in singing our first hymn, number 123, in your gray hymnal, Spirit of Life.
Point, we would normally sing the children to their RE classes, but that doesn't begin until the 28th, so for now the children will remain in service and we will have an intergenerational story. And the story today is Nibbles, A Green Tale by Charlotte Middleton. If there was one thing Nibbles loved more than soccer, it was eating dandelion leaves. He ate dandelion leaves at breakfast time, at lunchtime, and at dinner time. And if Nibbles felt hungry between meals, he ate more dandelion leaves. But it wasn't just Nibbles who liked dandelion leaves. Mr. and Mrs. Nibbles liked them too. His sister liked them. His friends liked them. In fact, every guinea pig in Dandeville loved dandelion leaves. All day long, the happy sound of munching and nibbling filled the air. Until, that is, dandelion leaves began to run out. Dandelion dishes were taken off the menus, and dandelion drinks disappeared from the shelves. The last few leaves could be bought on the internet for a huge amount of money. Soon the worst thing imaginable happened. All over town, the dandelions had been munched to nothing more than bitten down stalks, and the guinea pigs had to make do with chewy cabbage instead. Just one dandelion was left, but nobody knew about it except Nibbles. It happened to grow right outside his bedroom window. Nibbles' mouth watered at the sight of it, but he knew he must not eat it, or let anyone else eat it, not if it was the last dandelion in town. It might even be the last dandelion in the whole world. He thought hard and decided to go to the library. He borrowed a book called Everything You Need to Know About Dandelions, and he read it very carefully. He found a little cover to protect his dandelion, and every day he watered it and picked off the bugs. Every day he was very good about not taking even the tiniest little nibble while he waited and waited and waited. Until finally his dandelion had grown the most beautiful white head of tiny seeds. Very gently, Nibbles picked it and carried it all the way up Daisy Chain Hill. When he reached the top, he had just enough puff to take a deep breath and blow! The seeds filled the air and landed gently all over Dandeville. At first, nobody noticed, but soon the new plants started to sprout fresh leaves. And in no time at all, Dandeville was filled with the happy sound of munching once more. As for Nibbles, he still loved playing soccer. But now, there's something he loves just as much as eating dandelions. Nibbles loves growing them. The end. Our spiritual lives are filled up, our hearts are warmed by the giving of time, talents, love, comfort, and our many other human resources. We each receive from this church the opportunity to explore meaning, purpose, and value in our lives. How does that financial contribution you make here reflect what you receive? How does our collective money transform those within and beyond our congregation walls? This morning's offering will be most sincerely and gratefully received. May it be lovingly given.
Please join in reciting the offertory blessing. The words are printed in the order of service and are projected overhead. To the work of the church, which is weaving a tapestry of love we call community, we dedicate ourselves, and these are our offerings.
Each week, we take time to recognize the joys and sorrows, the celebrations and struggles of this community. You are invited to write joys and sorrows that you would like to have read aloud in the book over here.
I can get it.
Okay. It's covered up, so people might not have seen it today. Read aloud, and we will read this aloud before the service. For things in our heart that we hold in silence, we recognize them by taking a stone or stones from the bowl as we enter or from the bowl here on the chancel. We allow the stones to bring us into awareness of those things most important in our lives through thought or meditation. We then place them in the cleansing waters of this community, which includes a little bit of water collected from our annual water communion. If you have joys, sorrows, celebrations, or struggles you wish to recognize, you are invited to come forward now in a ritual of joy and sorrow.
each of the stones in this pool represents the heart's prayer, an intention offered to the universe of hope or sadness or concern. We offer all of them into the care of the universe that burdens may be lessened and joy shared. We hold in our hearts this week all who suffer through illness, war, financial tribulations, loss, and other sorrows. We hold in our hearts this week all who have joys and happiness that they may know where true happiness resides. I now invite you to rise in body or spirit and join in singing our next hymn, number 100 in your gray hymnal, I've Got Peace Like a River.
Reading this morning is by John Greer in his book Seeing, Knowing, Being, A Guide to Sacred Awakening. Experiential as opposed to conceptual esoteric spirituality has been compared to falling in love, something else that's impossible to adequately express in words. It is a matter of union with what is, with what we are in the deepest sense. In contrast to the exclusivity associated worship in different esoteric faiths, esoteric spirituality consistently draws us back to the inherent wholeness of all this is. We will now enter a brief period of silence.
Please, if you have your eyes closed, open them and be aware of the people around you and come back into this room. This morning I'm going to speak on spirituality and action. I hope to raise more questions than give answers. When I look for definitions of spirituality, of course, I went to Google. And I went to Wikipedia just to see what they had. So I'm going to read this. Modern spirituality may include a belief in the supernatural realm, personal growth, a quest for the ultimate sacred meaning, religious experience, or an encounter with one's inner dimension. Now that is so broad as to almost be meaningless. But I had to ask myself when I read this, how do you talk about spirituality when in these pews sit atheists, agnostics, Christians, earth-based religions, people who believe in earth-based religions, and theists, and maybe even some Christians? How does one talk about this? So I had to look further than, of course, than Wikipedia. The University of Minnesota has a monthly, I don't know what you want to call it, journal or little magazine called Taking Care of Your Health and Well-Being. And they say spirituality is a broad concept with room for many perspectives. Well, that certainly fits us. In general, it includes a sense of connection to something bigger than ourselves, and it typically involves a search for meaning in life. And as such, it is a universal human experience, something that touches us all. That's clear, but not perfect. I then turn to actual books that involve theology, spirituality, religion, and Mira Bai, star in her book, God of Love, A Guide to the Heart of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, says, "We are conditioned to treat the spiritual life as another commodity rather than as a discipline of inner transformation with corresponding commitment to alleviating suffering in the world." That sounds very Unitarian. We develop our spiritual paths and then we engage in social justice. Greer, who we've already quoted, says that one way to find the answers to life is to through direct experience, like through a system of meditation. He says, and this is describing a meditation he had, "Sitting in my neighborhood, populated with all the myriad things found in such a setting, from trees, birds, and squirrels, to passing cars, the mailman, and the children next door, I knew intuitively that there were no divisions, no boundaries, no separation. Only wholeness. Spirituality is a progression from our separateness to a reality of wholeness, from duality to oneness. Finally, I came upon An Atheist Guide to Spirituality, an article in Nautilus. And this is what Sam Harris, the author, says. About spirituality. As I gazed at the surrounding hills, a feeling of peace came over me. It grew to a blissful stillness that silenced my thoughts. In an instant, the sense of being a separate self, an I or a me, vanished. Everything was as it had been. The cloudless sky, the brown hills sloping to an inland sea, the pilgrims clutching their bottles of water. But I no longer felt separate from the scene, peering out into the world from behind my eyes. Only the world remained. I've spent many years practicing meditation, the purpose of which is to cut through the illusion of the self. Indeed, the conventional sense of self is an illusion, and spirituality largely consists of realizing this moment to moment. There are logical and scientific reasons to accept this claim, and there are, but recognizing it to be true is not a matter of understanding these reasons. Like many illusions, the sense of self disappears when closely examined, and this is done through the practice of meditation. The goal of meditation is to uncover a form of well-being that is inherent to the nature of our minds. It must, therefore, be available in the context of ordinary sights, ordinary sounds, sensations, and even ordinary thoughts. Peak experiences are fine, but real freedom must be coincident with normal waking life. That from an atheist. If you consider all these various viewpoints of spirituality, from the theist to the atheist, you will notice two things. One is that it comes in moments of silence, that spirituality is practiced in moments of silence. And it can be alone, it can be in a church, it could be any place. It could be using meditation, it could be walking down a country lane, it could be sitting on your front porch. But there is silence connected with spirituality. The second part that you will notice is they all come to the same conclusion. The atheist, the agnostic, the theist, the Buddhist, they all come to the same conclusion. And that is that spirituality washes away the illusion of our separateness. We often don't think of UUs as a spiritual group, but if you think about our principles of supporting each other in our various paths, and you think about the fact that we are an interdependent web, but then the next thing they lead into is social justice. It took me a very long time to realize that spirituality cannot be separate from social justice. If spirituality leads to the belief, or I don't mean intellectual belief, I mean gut belief, an experiential belief, that we are all one and are not separate, then I have to feel both the joys and the sufferings of others. I think that's one of the things that makes that ritual of our stones in the bowl so significant. It means that I have to be aware of the suffering that goes on in Syria. It means I have to be aware of the suffering that goes on in tribal fights in Africa. I have to be aware of the hunger in all of the world. I have to be aware of the hunger in our own backyard, where in the United States, 25% of our children live in poverty, and it's believed 14% of those go hungry every day. It means that there are seniors in our very own area going hungry because on both sides of the river there have been cuts in Meals on Wheels. On this side of the river, I can tell you that the meals were cut from 5 a day to 4 a day. They were cut from delivery every day to delivery once a week with 4 frozen meals that you warm in your microwave. People have lost, older people have lost not only their food, but they have lost that sense of community because those meals go to people who are very ill, very elderly, or in some way disabled. And they are suffering. That doesn't mean that I concentrate on just the sufferings of the world. There are great joys. Ask anybody who supports Hillary about being so far ahead in the polls. Look at the Olympic people who won their medals. In our church yesterday, there was a marriage, and I'm sure those people walked out of here happily. When you see your child or your grandchild win some kind of award or do something good or accomplish tying his shoe or her shoe, something, or their shoe, something is a joy that hits your soul that can't be described. When your kids grow up and they get maybe an internship you never thought they would get, or they get a job that's one of the best jobs that they want desperately, all of that. When maybe your best friend finally can say, it's time to retire, and they are joyful, and you can share that joy. That is all part of oneness. But it calls, oneness calls for more. It calls for social justice. Now, I have a huge problem with social justice. Maybe each of you sitting in those pews knows where to begin. I don't know where to begin. It's so overwhelming. Everything from the war in Syria to the fighting in Africa to the hunger in our own community to the fact that women still make 76 cents for every dollar in the same job that men have to the fact that racial injustice exists and seems to have maybe even grown over the last 50 years. It's become more subversive. I don't know where to begin. Now, in trying to figure out where to begin, I did some research on what one can do for social justice. One of the things is checkbook social justice. Now, that means you write a check for a good cause. Now, I have heard checkbook social justice really denigrated. Like, oh, people aren't putting themselves on the line. Now, I don't know, unless you're very rich. Most of us who write a check for social justice are giving something else up. Maybe it's a new pair of shoes. Maybe it's a dinner out. But in some way, writing a check for social justice costs us, and we are putting ourselves on the line. The question becomes, for whom do I write the checks? I consider writing to this church, giving to this church a form of social justice, because we are people who believe in social justice, and if we were not here and didn't have a place to come and support each other, I don't know what would happen. I can't imagine this place being gone. So this is one of my biggest donations because I so firmly believe in us. But outside of that, I don't know really where to put my money. And I think that's where spirituality comes in. I think that's where, when you're sitting on your porch looking out, you're able to think and discern where you should put that money. What else besides you? Is it going to be Jimmy Carter, who's gone after, I think they're called guinea worms, and has in some countries eliminated blindness and therefore eliminated poverty because people who are blind are not well cared for in those countries? You know, the wells they have put in to give fresh water, do I give it to them? Or do I give it to the Southern Poverty Law that goes ahead and takes on anything from women getting unfair treatment to LGBT to taking on hate groups and trying to get them out of business by suing them? Or maybe I should give to the ACLU, who promotes civil rights. Or maybe I should give in my own community to Alton Schools, who needs books to read to their kids. Or maybe I should give it to SSP. There's the grandfather and grandmother, foster grandfather and foster grandmother program there. There's the Meals on Wheels there. I don't know. Because there are so many needs crying out that the only thing I can do is to sit in my quiet. And while I'm in a spiritual concentration, think about where do I write that check to? Because I know of no other way to discern that. Now, another way of entering into social justice is by single actions. But now, what do I mean by that? Okay, I go into SSP to exercise in a Christmas time. They have this big tree, and on the tree you pull a name, and it might say socks or gloves or blankets or something, and you give that to SSP, and it goes to one of their clients who has no family or anyone to give them a gift. And usually these are things that people need. I've never seen anything frivolous on that tree. It can be a single action. I went into BJC Hospice, where my husband, who cared so wonderfully for my husband, and I donated some things. And I said, I really don't know if you need these, you know, because mostly insurance pays for this kind of stuff. They stepped back and they looked at me astounded. And they said, where did you get that idea? I said, well, you know, you have private insurance or Medicaid or Medicare, and they buy wheelchairs and walkers, and they go, oh, don't you know how many people we have in hospice? They don't have insurance sometimes. Or their insurance doesn't pay for any of this. I was astounded. And I was a little bit humiliated by not knowing how great the need was. So we can do social justice by a single act. We can also engage in social justice by joining groups. For example, I believe the League of Women Voters is really going after gerrymandering and voters' rights and things this year. That's their project, at least in their literature I get. We can join them and help with those projects. You know, there's groups in town of every kind in both across the river and here. All you have to do is open your phone book, and if you still use a phone book, or get on the web, and you will find all kinds of social service organizations that you can join to help engage in social justice. And I can't name them because there are so many, too many to name. In some ways, joining with groups is more efficient because it's sort of like manpower doubled, because it's used where it is most needed. The last thing we can do in regard to social justice is changing global ways of doing things in the world. And this can be such groups as the UU has a group, for instance, that does social justice in the Midwest, and that I signed up for. And while I couldn't go September 12th, they decided to go ahead and picket in front of the governor's mansion, his home, because of the budget crisis, which after their research, they believe is more his fault than the legislator's fault. So they decided to do that. They do various things around here. They've joined unions when they've had pension, people have had pensions unfairly cut. But they also work on global projects just in the Midwest. And they have goals connected to that. That would be one organization you could join that works, does more than just picket. They actually look to change policy and laws and do a lot of things with the legislatures in the various Midwest states. That would be an example. Women League of Voters would be one. You can find a lot of groups that work to do global changing. Most of it is a lot of paperwork, visiting congressmen, visiting senators, doing background things for lawsuits. It's not glamorous, but it changes social policy. Now, I don't know, and I'm going to be perfectly honest, which of any of these things to do. I feel overwhelmed by the need. And I've been meditating about this for a while, and I didn't get an answer. Nothing came to me. So I do, when that happens, I do my little universe. I want you to guide me. I don't know what to do. I don't have 24 hours a day. Some of you don't even have 3 hours a day. You have jobs, you have kids, you have work, you have grandkids. You have parents and your kids that you're sometimes caring for. So we all face the dilemma of how much time and what to do. Now, I quit asking the universe because I wasn't getting an answer. And then last Sunday, somebody walked up to me and said, Dee, do we need board permission? You know, this is the products group, the one that wants to give out products. Do we need board permission to write corporations to see if we can't get products in bulk? Do you need board permission? I don't know. So I made an executive decision on the spot and said no. And I'm driving home and I'm thinking, wait a minute. Oh my goodness. We may be able to buy things wholesale, in bulk. We may be able to get donations. And it comes to me, my clients rarely complain of being hungry because there are so many resources here. But I remember one client coming in and saying, I'm really glad I'm here. Now, they don't usually say that when they get committed to a mental hospital. But the client was glad because the client had a favorite pair of pants. And it costs so much in the community to go to a laundromat. And they do not get soap on food stamps. So in the mental hospital, he could wash his favorite pair of pants instead of throwing them out, because I found out sometimes it's cheaper to go to Goodwill or to go to various community services that give out clothes than it is to go to the laundromat and wash your clothes. So you throw them away. And I'm thinking of all this on the way home, and I'm thinking, we're a church on two sides of the river. If we get these donations, maybe we could give products on both sides of the river. And all this is going through my mind, and I thought, I can't take on this project. I got way too much to do, and it already has great leaders who know much more about this product thing than me. And then it came to me, that is my answer. We are one, and people in this community don't have toilet paper because food stamps don't pay for it. They don't have soap because food stamps doesn't pay for soap. Food stamps doesn't pay for laundry soap. Food stamps doesn't pay for dishwashing soap. Food stamps doesn't pay for diapers. Now, we have heard a lot about wages not going up. But there's a lot more than wages that haven't gone up. Neither have checks for those who are needy gone up. Those of us who are on Social Security know that we didn't get our benefits raised this year. People on SSDI, which is Social Security Disability Income, that's for people who are so sick that they can't work, and they have made it very hard now to get on that. They got their benefits cut Imagine being off work, being on chemo, and you get your Social Security benefits cut, something you worked for and paid into, because you only get Social Security disability insurance if you worked and got enough quarters, but it's been cut. I don't know what is right for any of you in the pews, but I know this. We have great leaders for our project of giving out products. I know that I don't have a lot of time, even though I am retired. And I know this, that I don't have to think about what I need to do. All I need to do is go to those leaders and to tell them, I have 3 hours a month. What do you need me to do? That's where my thinking and my spirituality came together. That may not be the answer for you. Maybe you want to get involved in big projects like legislation and join another group. But I know that as a Unitarian, the two ideas of spiritual development and social justice cannot be separated. So I invite you to think about it, and maybe to think about if you have just a few hours a month to give them to our committee that's doing the products. Please join in singing hymn 118 in the gray hymnal, This Little Light of Mine.
This chalice, this service ends. But our service in the community begins. Please remain in your seats as we end the service with a prelude by Nicole Robbins.
Okay.